Well, hi again, everybody. My name is Jim Burns, and thanks for listening to the Consistently Fit podcast. Yesterday, which was January 17th, I had the privilege of interviewing Stan Gibson, who is an entrepreneur, a public speaker, an inspirational speaker, and he speaks a whole lot about corporate health. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to have him on the podcast so he could speak about things that are necessary, things that people have to do in order to keep their corporation healthy and in order for them to remain healthy, which in turn keeps their corporation healthy. So without further ado, we're going to begin that podcast or that episode, I should say, okay, an interview with Stan Gibson. Enjoy the interview, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into our podcast. We love having you here, and it's our mission to bring you all the latest and greatest tips, skills, and know-how to make you the best that you can be. We know that you have it in you, and we're going to show you how. Now, let's get started.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Consistently Fit podcast. We were formerly Anti-Bullying 101, but we haven't stopped dealing with bullying. We just learned a few new things along the way. And those, what we've discovered, who are physically fit, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually fit are far less angry, and they have more confidence, and they just seem to love themselves a whole lot more. This translates into greater love and respect for others, and guess what? A reduction in bullying. So for the record, my name is Jim Burns. I'm a 69-year-old NASEM certified personal trainer. This show is for everybody. We want you to be fit. We want you to be happy in your life. We want you to live a vibrant life. So I thank you for listening. And today we have on with us Stan Gibson. And Stan is a corporate executive. He's an author. He's an entrepreneur, a speaker, and he's a success coach. And he believes a whole lot in if in fact the company is going to be successful, the employees, the employer, the leaders have to be healthy as well. He's a sought after speaker throughout the United States, and I'm sure elsewhere. He's a longtime corporate real estate executive with over 35 years of leadership with Fortune 500 firms. He has the ability to mix and communicate strategies on the athletic field and in the business world. And he is just really into trying to make sure that we can stay fit physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And he has a company called Oxygen Plus. And without further ado, I welcome Stan Gibson. Stan, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks, James. Let's get the party started. I'm excited, and I really appreciate very much, mind, body, and soul. A lot of the clients I have, that's where we start before we can even start talking about leadership and culture and all the other things. So I'm excited and looking forward to seeing where this goes.
Mm-hmm. Stan, let me ask you a question. You have this company that you started. You were 35 years in, the executive world in real estate. What was your reason for switching over to being a speaker and an author and just doing other things?
Yeah, no, great question, James. And I'd say You know, I got into this about 3 years ago, but I will tell you, I really got into it about 10 years ago, maybe even 11. And I'll tell you why. Even though I was working with a large corporate firm, Fortune 250, I had this chance moment. And it started, you know, my wife and I were having dinner at a restaurant, and we had a friend, you know, step around the corner. We hadn't seen in about 4 or 5 years. And when he stepped around, it was like, oh, great to see you. And his name's Jerry. And Jerry walked around, and Jerry's no just friend. I mean, Jerry's one of those special people, James, that, you know, they've got it all together. And, you know, he's a CEO of a financial firm. He's a foster parent. He and his wife have a marriage ministry across the world. He just does all this fascinating stuff. And my wife and I are fortunate to call Jerry and his wife Nancy friends. And so we talked and just caught up real briefly. And then Jerry walked away. We said, hey, let's get together at another time. When Jerry then did that, he came back over about 5 minutes later. And he looked at us and he said, you know, he said, I just felt compelled to come back over here. And I want to tell you something. He said, I've got cancer. And he said, I've got a 50-50 chance of living for 5 years. And I wanted you to know that. And as you know, when somebody lays a bomb on you like that, it's hard to respond. You don't know what to say. And before I could get anything out, he looked at me and he just said, no. I just want you to know that when death becomes certain, life becomes rich. When death becomes certain, life becomes rich. And when I heard that, and that was 10 to 12 years ago, when I heard that, you know, it made me think, why do we wait to get sick? Why do we wait to get, you know, that you know, message from a doctor before we decide to get well? And you know, one of the things that Jerry said, he said, you know, now, he said, while I wish I didn't have this diagnosis, it's been the best 3 months of my life. He said, I'm starting to delegate more at work. I'm having conversations with my wife that we've never had before. I've taken all of my kids on special one-on-one vacations even in the last 3 months. What do you need from dad before, you know, he ever leaves this world? And you know, the nice thing is that was 12 years ago. Jerry's still with us. And when we talk a lot about the things that I preach and the things that you preach and the things that we talk about, you know, mind, body, and soul, he looked at my book, and I have a book called Living a Rich and Intentional Life that actually formed out of that very conversation with him. He said, when I look at all the things that we talk about, Stan, those are the things keeping me alive. Because one of the things that when we get sick is, our immune system is low. And when we're, you know, not sleeping well, we're not getting exercise, when even relationships can play havoc on our immune system. Mm-hmm. So when we're not living a healthy life, our immune system gets low. And that becomes one of the 4 to 5 reasons that, you know, we start to get diseases and we get sick. So, you know, the nice thing is, like I say, Jerry's still living. And in my book, I do talk about it in my first chapter. And one of the things that I asked Jerry and his wife a few years ago, I said, how do you take this type A personality now that has changed his life around? What are you doing that's different? And it's wonderful because, you know, Jerry meets with other people that are recovering from cancer, and they actually take art classes and they have a glass of wine. They sit, and I show in my book, you know, some of the pictures he's doing. He could only do stick figures before. He's doing pictures that to me are like Rembrandt. I mean, I just was like, you gotta be kidding me. But Jerry found a way to start to take care of himself, mind, body, and soul. And that's what's keeping him alive. So that's a very important story as to how I got started in the business. Again, always have a plan B. He started my plan B. Once I heard this story, I started speaking. I started doing motivational speaking. I started doing speaking on leadership. And then it kind of forced me to start to do a lot of research on the neuroscience and the physiological aspects of sleeping well. You know, what's the science around sleeping? What's the science around nutrition? What's the science around exercising and relationships and hydration? And once I had kind of brought all this up to, into something digestible, the pandemic hit, and never let a good pandemic go to waste. I used all that time to start to read to start to actually write a book called Living a Rich and Intentional Life. So that's a lot of the aspects of, and then I kind of jumped off that bridge 3 years ago. Part of it was my doing, part of it, the company was looking to downsize, and it was the perfect opportunity for me to, to have a soft landing, start a new business, and do what I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a question for you, because for several years, I did a lot of consulting and public speaking in schools in terms of behavior management, working with kids, dealing with angry and irate parents, you know, and so on. But I found that the most frustrating thing for me was having what I believe to be the solution to the problem, in terms of dealing with parents and teachers and students and so on, but not being able to convince leadership that they had to do a 360. So you walk into a company and you have a theme that you carry with you in terms of being healthy, I remember it being called taking care of the goose, because once you kill the goose, you don't get any more golden eggs. And we're like goose. When we're dead, there are no more golden eggs. How do you convince leadership that and make them really understand that this is the way to go? This is the way you have to handle things. And because you're going to get people that are, I mean, they're, and I'm going to use this word kindly, they're stiffs. They don't want to make any changes in their own life. And change to them is just, you say change and they almost get nervous about it. How do you do it?
Well, you know, it's not for everybody. And, you know, you're right. A lot of leaders, they're entrepreneurs, they're kind of hard, you know, they've got there by doing things their own way. And it you know, those are people that I may or may not reach, but I will tell you, the ones that I do reach, they understand. And I say something and please grasp, you know, kind of what I'm saying here, that when you're not doing well at home, you're not going to do well at work. And if you're not doing well at work, you're not going to do well at home. Who wants to show up basically to work each day with, you know, you're frustrated, you've got problems that, you know, you've got marital problems, you've got kids, but you're not at your best. And so, you know, it's a holistic approach, and you have to ask leaders, you know, do you want people showing up like that? What are the consequences of basically us not, you know, taking care of ourselves? I have a very, very firm belief too, and that is that you have to be, as a leader or a manager or as an employee, you have to be a little bit selfish, to be extremely selfless. You have to be a little selfish, to be very selfless, and to be a servant leader. And what I mean by that, and I've got, you know, I'm living proof of it, because along the lines of the story with Jerry, I believe in doubling down on you. And I'll tell you why. About 5 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, you know, all the emotions were running through our head as to, you know, the unknown and what do we do? And, you know, there's tears and there's doubt and there's a lot of things. And at the time, while all the focus is on her, you know, I'm still got, you know, $1.5 billion to $2 billion real estate portfolio and a team running a portfolio across the world. I've still got community obligations. I've got a lot of things going on in my life. And of course, she is always number one and will continue to be number one. But when this happened, it actually was proof for me that I had to be selfish. I had to be selfish. I had to take care of me the first hour of the morning. I had to get up just a little bit earlier. I had to focus on mind, body, and soul, because if I took care of me the first hour of the morning, I then had the rest of the day to bring abundant energy to her, to my team, to the community, and I can balance it all a lot better. Cognitive, you know, the whole bit helps me sleep better at night. If I'm not at my best, how am I going to help everybody else? So that's one of the key reasons, you know, when you say talking to employers, I will use that story. And I think, you know, I have a lot of single executive coaches or executive clients. And they ask, you know, they want to get started talking about leadership. How do I become a better leader? And we start talking and we find out they're not sleeping well. We find out that they're getting up in the morning. First thing they do is they turn on the TV. They're watching a bunch of shootings, killings, you know, something that basically starts to have a neurological effect on their brain. You know, they go downstairs. They look for the first thing to eat. You know, they grab their coffee, they grab some donuts, and a lot of them are working parents, and, you know, they're getting kids out the door and they're feeding them the same thing. And they haven't really taken on any exercise. They haven't done anything, mind, body, and soul. And so they're wondering why they're crashing by 10:30 or 11, and they're just going on adrenaline the rest of the day. And it's a vicious cycle without any recovery. So one of the things that, you know, not really by design, it just happens to be that way, is I work with a lot. We said, you know what, we got to get you healthy before we start working on leadership and we start working on your company and we start working on those things that you came to me for in the first place. And it's amazing because after a month, you know, they start doing certain things, and I don't advocate fasting. I don't advocate certain things. But when I start to bring a lot of the science and a lot of the aspects to the table and they start to do it, they say, oh my God, I've got this energy. I feel better. I feel like learning now. I feel like being a leader. So that's another aspect of you know, you got to be good at home to be good at work. You got to be good at work to be good at home. And I think a lot of it is this mind, body, and soul and paying special attention to it.
You've done some work with football teams, I see. And you've managed to work with the leaders and so on. And some of the folks you work with had players that they went on to participate in the NFL.
Yeah. So, you know, actually what I did was, you know, when I got out of high school, I had a pretty good career in high school. You know, I was a tight end and had some success, and I got recruited and I went to play for a team called Eastern Illinois University. And maybe you haven't heard of Eastern Illinois University, but in a few seconds, you'll probably see why I bring that up. But I went there and I was really excited because, you know, I thought, hey, you know, that the guy that hosted me, that, you know, walked me around the campus, you know, hosted me for the weekend, he became a third round draft pick for the Steelers. And so, you know, I knew that this team had some talent and it was going to be a fun place to play. Unfortunately, you know, they not only lost their first game, their second and their third, they lost every game of the year up until the last one. They became 1-10. Now, you don't keep your job by, you know, losing football games. And so they brought in a new guy by the name of Daryl Mudra, otherwise known as Dr. Victory, which I think we would all love to have a nickname called Dr. Victory. But the things that he came in and started to impress upon us were a revelation. I mean, it was just a revelation to me, because I'll just get to the punchline. His very first year of coming in, we went from 1-10 the year before with a different coach to national champions that very next year with this coach. And some of the principles that he had really kind of stuck with me as I work with companies and with leaders. And I call it a people-centric leadership. And so one of the things he did when he first came in was he said, you know what? He said, I know very little about football. And, you know, when you're just coming off a 1-10, you don't want to hear your new coach say, I know very little about football. But he wasn't kidding us. He said, you know, the most success I had was, you know, coaching my grandson's Pop Warner team to the city championship. But he's a student of Socrates. He's a student of philosophy. And with that, he brought some authentic, just his authentic self to each of us. And he said, in fact, I'm going to coach from the press box because I can see better up there. But that ability to be authentic in today's world and with today's leaders, that ability to lay your soul out there in front of people, that takes some courage. And the second thing he said is, he said, you know what, I'm going to surround you with some really good coaches and people that, you know, are going to train you well. And, you know, one of the first coaches he hired was our offensive coordinator that had just played at Eastern Illinois just a few years earlier by the name of Mike Shanahan, who's got 3 Super Bowl rings. Huh. And now his son is, you know, head coach for the San Francisco 49ers, who wasn't born at the time, by the way. So that gives you a little bit into my age. And he brought on some other coaches that are in the Hall of Fame, and they're equally as good. But he surrounded us with really talented people. And when I work with leaders, I talk about having your own board of directors. I talk about having very intentional people in your life, whether it be your doctor, your financial advisor, your mentor, your spiritual mentor, your health coach. But I talk a lot about that because he did. He surrounded us with some of the best. And then the third thing that he did was he said, you know what? While I'm surrounding you with good coaches, each of you, the football players, you're the key to the success. Because when you're out on the field, you know if you're getting beat or you're getting your butt whooped. You just, you know, if you don't tell us what's happening on the field, we have no way of knowing what kind of adjustments to make. And so how many companies today would start to, you know, that are working with people with boots on the ground, start to excel just by having that knowledge around saying, okay, so now we know why our product's selling, it's not selling. We know, you know, where, you know, what are some of the in-house problems we're having around trust and engagement, et cetera. But just getting, you know, you've got to be close to the employees. You've got to be close to the workforce to understand how to make shifts and pivot, you know, during the game or during the strategy. You know, those were a few of the things. Obviously, he did one other thing, which I want to mention this because I think it's very important. The players that we won the national championship, and I redshirted that year, by the way, one of the worst decisions I ever made. But that year that they won the national championship, it was 90% of the same players from the year before. 90%. But what he did was they moved people into the right swim lane or into the right position. The quarterback went out. He was a much better wide receiver. They moved a linebacker that, you know, he had to think too much, moved him to an edge rusher. All he had to do was pin his ears back and go after the quarterback, and he became All-American. You know, moved people around. A lot of tight ends became linemen. They just put on 20 or 30 pounds. You know, they did, but they were in the right position. And so when I work with a lot of clients, we work and do the same thing. One of the first things we do is we say, know who you are and know who you're not. It goes back to Coach Mudra showing his authenticity. And when you know the swim lane that you're best in, life becomes so much more fun. So those were some aspects. And I did have the chance to I did not play my junior and senior year, but I had the chance to become a assistant head coach at a high school that was very, very poorly run. And we went through a lot of the same success in those 2 years, incorporating a lot of those paradigms, which have kind of led me into where I am today. I really embrace a lot of those when I work with clients.
Yeah, you know what? And I apologize to you because I blew that question. But it was Dr. Victory was actually the coach that you had that became such a good example to you. Could you, Stan, just go over with the audience, and it may be off base a little bit here, but these keys that you have for unlocking the impossible, what are those keys?
Well, again, you know, I do. In fact, if anybody is interested, you know, you had mentioned, I actually just made a name change on my company about a week ago. And, you know, people don't know really much about what Oxygen Plus is, but I changed it because I've been working with a speech consultant out on the East Coast. And, you know, we've been really ramping up my speaking ability across the US and globally. But my name of my company is StanGibsonSpeaks.com now. So we just made that switch. And so you wouldn't have even known that because, you know, we just launched that to the public last week. So StanGibsonSpeaks.com. And if you want to go to StanGibsonSpeaks.com, you know, one of the first things it's going to ask you is, you know, do you want to get a free copy of my 7 Habits of Highly Effective People-Centric Leaders? Not only on that, but if you want, I also have another PDF that I love to give away, and it's called The Double Down on You. And it goes into all the science around sleep, nutrition, you know, exercise, routines, essentialism, et cetera. And it goes into the science on it and some of the key ways to go ahead and incorporate them into your life. But your question to me, you know, was really more specifically about how do you unlock some of that stuff? And again, I go back to mind, body, and soul and working with people on getting their mind right, getting their body right. And, you know, everybody comes from a different walk of life when it comes to their faith or their soul. So I don't obviously push my beliefs on anybody else, but I do believe that there is, if you don't believe in anything, then you're still believing in something. And so you have to kind of, you know, find out what do you want to do from a faith-based standpoint. But really, when I get down to it, I do talk about authenticity. I talk about knowing who you are, who you're not. And I believe that when you know the swim lane you want to be in, you'll never work another day in your life. And you can also, I just got off a call right before this one with a solopreneur, and she was trying to do everything herself. And we talked, and I'm going to help walk her through a process to basically know what her swim lane is and make sure that, you know, she can leverage other people to do the things that she has no energy nor expertise to do. So having that authenticity is one. The second is, you know, and I mentioned this before, have your own board of directors. I think it's important. You look at organizations, I don't care how big the organization, it can be a $2 billion organization. They have a board of directors. They hire the best, the smartest, the brightest people that are going to basically speak truth to them. They're going to tell them what they don't want to hear. And that's what a board does. And that's what we need individually, whether that be your, you know, we try to have the best doctors that we can afford, that our insurance can afford. We try to have the best financial advisor. We try to have the best dentist. We try to have the best. I've got an accountability group that I meet with on at 6 o'clock on Wednesday mornings. And, you know, to tell me the truth, you know, if I'm starting to walk a jagged line, you know, hey, unleash on me. So surround yourself with really good people and a board. I have business mentors that, and I'll tell you what, there's so many people retiring today, James, that would love, I mean, they're smart. They've had executive positions. They don't know what they're going to do next. They would love to spend 30 to 45 minutes with you 2 to 3 to 4 times a year and just impart all their wisdom and their knowledge. And I do, I've got several of these people and they're part of my board. And so I do, I have it calendared and, you know, we meet, you know, once a quarter and I tell them what's going on with me. And I ask for that same truth coming back to me. I also believe in today's world that leaders need to protect their brand. I won't go into the full story, but I will tell you that in my book, I do talk about protecting your brand. I think we're in a very vulnerable time of life from a society perspective. And of course, with social media. And I believe that I'll just tell you, I worked for 15 years for Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo had probably one of the best, absolute. In fact, it wasn't probably, it was. It was the best brand in the world since the mid-late 1800s. If you wanted something delivered on time, you called Wells Fargo. Well, it only took a few individuals about 8 or 9 years ago to decide that they wanted to cross that line. And they wanted to put self over company and profits over doing the right thing. And it's kind of like when you put a your brand is like this. It's like you can do a lot of good things. And every time you do, you put a drop of water in a bucket. And it may be 20, 30, 40 years, and that bucket is full because you have just got a great brand. It takes one bad decision, one moment of weakness to dump that bucket out. And that bucket doesn't get full overnight. You've got to reload it one drop at a time. So that's something I think that's very important is working with people to protect their brand, to make good decisions, and you know, to keep kind of their values in check. Mm-hmm. The fourth thing that I'll talk about is just simplicity of life and having routines. If you haven't read the book by James Clear on habits, I strongly recommend you do, because habits, we make over 35,000 decisions a day. And we start making those decisions from the time we get up. And sometimes we've made our 35,000 decisions by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And when we do that, we're kind of vegging the rest of the day on bad food, on bad choices on the computer, on bad choices on TV. And so having that ability to have routines in our life that kind of put us on autopilot. For example, my morning routines, I have 6 to 7 things that I do when I get up in the morning. And I don't have to think about, you know, it's just, they're just automatic to me so that I can save as many brain cells as possible to be able to get through the day with abundant amount of energy. Mm-hmm. And so there are different ways of building good routines. And that is a great place to start, is with James Clear's book on habits. And I use a lot of his information in working with my clients. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing I will say is enjoy the journey. You know, when you get, you mentioned you're 69, you know, I've had 30 to 40 years in the business, and what I do now, I do because I love it. It's because it's how God designed me, and it's what I should have been doing all along. But when I look back, I think the only thing I would have probably done more is just enjoy the journey. Because it is a journey. You're going to have some ups, you're going to have some downs. We're all human beings. We're going to make mistakes. But to find that way to have good relationships in life. And, you know, the one thing I'll finish on right here is I can tell you how to sleep better, eat better, get exercise. I can teach you how to become physically very, very healthy. And with that, you'll live, provided there's nothing that goes wrong, but you'll live 20 to 25% longer. However, relationships, healthy relationships in your life account can actually help you live 60 to 65% longer. And there's science to back this up. They say you can die of a broken heart. You really can, because see, when you're depressed, your arteries start to restrict and it's harder to get blood flow to the heart. So there's certain aspects of having good relationships, and some relationships are in family, and I don't want to say you're stuck with them, but you have to learn how to manage them. But there's other relationships that bring you down that you can start to divorce yourself from. So you've got to always surround yourself with very good people that basically build you up and not tear you down. Those are some of the aspects in just working with clients that I find very interesting and rewarding to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just share one last thing, and I know you got to go. I think, you know, just coming from an educational standpoint, much of what you talk about could feasibly be a curriculum that gets built to teach our students in high school and potentially and even in middle school, because I think I liked your language, the right swim lane. Because lots of times, you know, the idea that you can be anything you want to be. Well, you know, I wanted to be a professional baseball player, you know, and I'm talking to you. But the point that I make when I say that is sometimes you have to have somebody point you into that right swim lane. And if we continuously tell kids who have, maybe they're not the greatest students in the world, well, maybe they could be what they want to be. But you know what? I notice your strengths, and I would like to capitalize on them. And maybe we've got to move over to here in order to be more successful, rather than letting them go down a path where it could be riddled with failure, which will do nothing but discourage them and put them in a position where they don't know what to do as they grow older. And I think we as adults have to help kids do that and to recognize their strengths and weaknesses, and we have to point them. I think that it's kind of like we have to recognize it, and it's kind of like how they're bent. We got to help move them into that the right lane for them to be able to have a smoother run of it.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I'll just share something very quickly. Back in the late 1960s, NASA wanted to put a man on the moon and get him back safely. So they turned to a guy by the name of Dr. George Lanz, and they said, can you develop an assessment that will find us geniuses that, you know, are creative, they can think in the moment. They're basically in the right swim lane, and you know, they were meant to do this. He built this assessment, and he did something very unique. He gave it to 1,650 preschoolers. Now, these preschoolers, this was not an IQ test. This was how creative they are and flowing in the moment. These preschoolers scored 98%. And then he took those same 1,650, and when they turned 15 years of age, they scored 11%. Mm-hmm. And then he took adults that were 30 and gave it to them, and they scored 2%. So what happened to creativity? You know, if you think about, like you said, you want to be a baseball player. Well, I had all those same ambitions when I was on the playground. You know, I was the quarterback, the receiver. I mean, I just wanted to lead. I just loved being kind of the center of whatever and leading. And then, you know, at some point in time, you start getting told, well, maybe you're not the right leader. You know, maybe you should be this over here. And maybe you should, we get fed so much that starts to tear away at our creativity. Mm-hmm. The fact is, I was in real estate for 35 years, had a great living and a great career out of it. I was never probably the best real estate person in the room. But my gifts and my strengths are basically, A, I probably got the meeting originated because I'm an activator. It's one of my strengths. I was fortunate to surround myself with good people and hire good people, and they never left. They kept, mm-hmm. they stayed with me. I had the same team for 14 years. Mm-hmm. So I was able to use some of those gifts, even though I was in the real estate world. Real estate was not my gift. It was really being more on the people side of leadership. So that's what I think. To your point, you're spot on. I think we've just got to make people realize it isn't an industry they have to be in. It's a set of skills that they have to utilize within that industry to be in their swim lane.
Mm-hmm. Stan, I want to thank you for being on the show. You did a great job, and I'm so glad I got a chance to meet you and hear your perspective. And I'm going to be going over your material much more. Stan Gibson, folks, it was a great interview, Stan. Thanks for doing it. I want to give you one last shot here. Tell everybody anything that they need to know in terms of social media, where you're speaking next. The floor is yours. You know, brag about yourself.
Thanks. Hey, no, I appreciate that. Again, go to stangibsonspeaks.com. And, you know, from there, I've got a video on there on the very front page that kind of shows me in front of the audience talking about people-centric leadership. It's only a 5-minute vid. And I think at least you'll get a flavor. And then do me a favor. If you ever just want to have a conversation, I just love to talk to people. I'm in a position of life where, you know, I can be a servant leader. And I just got off the phone again with somebody who I don't expect to become a client, but was able to give them some advice in they were ecstatic. I was ecstatic. And so go to stangibsonspeaks.com and just listen, see if you like the message, and give me a shout if you want to talk any further.
Thank you, Stan. It was a pleasure having you on the show. And hopefully, maybe we might do it again. Thanks a bunch.
I love it. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care, everybody. We'll have a rich and intentional life.
Okay, that was Stan Gibson, who I interviewed on the 17th of January. Great interview, great guy. If you have an opportunity, go to Stan Gibson Speaks and take a look at the content that he has. Use him corporately, use him personally. I think you'll find that you'll be very satisfied. He's a terrific guy and a terrific servant, as he points out. So my name is Jim Burns. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. We're going to be starting a series coming up on longevity. And I'm going to start this next week. So February, what, no, it's not February. What is it? January 20th, 21st, 23rd. We're going to start this, and I hope you tune in and listen. I know I've been away for a bit, but I'm back now, and I look forward to communicating with all of you once again. So thanks for listening. See you around the pool hall. Take care.